on this episode of Rebel Spirit Radio.
What Mary Oliver, the poet, says, which is, you will not save what you do not love. So much of this feeling that we have for the earth is essential if we are ever going to live in a way that honors her and sustains her. The other thing is, many of us believe more and more that the most important thing we need right now is a shift in consciousness, right? So we're so goal focused, understandably, and there's a real panic going on, understandably, about the state of the climate, the state of the earth, you know, mass extinction, all of these things that we're confronting. So, of course, the deep desire is just to rush in and, in our hubris, try and find those solutions to take care of everything. But unless we shift our consciousness and align it with the rhythms and wisdoms and ways of the earth, we're only going to create more destruction.
Welcome to Rebel Spirit Radio, exploring the frontiers of spirituality, consciousness, the esoteric, and humanity's sacred relationship with a living earth.
I'm your host, Nick Mather, and in this episode, I am joined by author Mary Reynolds Thompson to discuss her latest book, The Way of the Wild Soul Woman, which explores five earth archetypes that represent different stages of transformation and aspects of feminine power. We also discuss the necessity of emotional literacy, rewilding, and cultivating joy as essential for environmental and personal transformation. Also, please be sure to like and subscribe to this podcast on whatever platform you use to listen to or view podcasts. Your support is truly appreciated. Mary Reynolds Thompson is the founder of Live Your Wild Soul Story and an award-winning writer, internationally recognized speaker, and facilitator of journal and poetry therapy. A pioneer in the spiritual ecology movement and the author of Reclaiming Your Wild Soul, she joins me today to discuss her latest book, The Way of the Wild Soul Woman, Five Earth Archetypes to Unleash Your Full Feminine Power. Mary, welcome to Rebel Spirit Radio.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Well, I am so very happy that you are here because your book, The Way of the Wild Soul Woman, seems to me to be kind of the epitome of a rebel spirit. And what I want to do with this podcast, you know, at the end of my description, I always have that, you know, I investigate the ways of reconnecting to a sacred earth. And I see you doing that in your work. And so I thought, before we get into the details of the book, I thought maybe we could begin by discussing spiritual ecology and what that is. And then maybe we can tie that together with the wild soul woman.
Beautiful. Yeah. Spiritual ecology. Yeah. It's a term we really hadn't heard up until a few years ago. So I'll tell you what it means to me. It means that we find and source spiritual connection through our relationship to the earth and the universe. So Western religion has really told us that, you know, paradise and the divine kingdom is sort of offshore somewhere, right? And it isn't here. And for me, it's this return to understanding that the world is ensouled and inspirited, that it's sentient, and that when we understand that, we begin to weave our own spirits back into the fabric of the land. And so it feels very deep to me. And I also feel that I want to say one more thing, which is, I think there is full permission for each person to find their own way into that meaning
okay,
of what that is. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, very good. Thank you for that. I've struggled with this a little bit, the term spiritual ecology, just because it seems a little clunky. And I've been trying to find different ways of discussing it, but that clarification is really helpful. And I think that something that is going through your book and your work in general is this notion of, I'm going to reframe the Hermetic axiom of as above, so below, but it's as within, so without. And that the major work that's going on here is to heal the earth. We have to heal ourselves first and kindle that connection, rekindle that connection with a sacred living planet.
Yeah, I always love what, excuse me, a frog in my throat. It's a very ecological moment. What Mary Oliver, the poet, says, which is, you will not save what you do not love. So much of this feeling that we have for the earth is essential if we are ever going to live in a way that honors her and sustains her. The other thing is, many of us believe more and more that the most important thing we need right now is a shift in consciousness, right? So we're so goal focused, understandably, and there's a real panic going on, understandably, about the state of the climate, the state of the earth, mass extinction, all of these things that we're confronting. So, of course, the deep desire is just to rush in and, in our hubris, try and find those solutions to take care of everything. But unless we shift our consciousness and align it with the rhythms and wisdoms and ways of the earth, we're only going to create more destruction. So for me, it's really about, let's rewild our souls before we think that we have the solutions to rewilding this earth. And this word ecology, our home, the knowing of our home, is also so important, because what we realize is that everything we do matters, because we're in this incredible web of life. And if one part moves, everything changes. So this sense of, don't move too fast. Yes, there's a sense of urgency, but don't blunder into thinking you know the answers before you have really done this work inside.
Yeah, I appreciate that very much. And it seems to me that the guidance that you're providing in the book and what you're speaking about here is that we need to allow nature to be our guide.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, when you think about it, I mean, we, as we are, have been around for about 200,000 years, right? We're such a little speck in time. And nature has been evolving for billions of years in an incredibly successful way. And in fact, we emerged out of the body of the earth, because she had been doing all of her magnificent things for so long. So this idea that we aren't nature, that somehow we're different from nature, superior to nature, is, to me, it's one of those things that when you get it, it's like you go, how did I not see that? A lot of people come up to me, and I'm sure with you, it's like, I never thought I emerged out of the earth. This is like a shocking thing, because we all thought we were placed on it. So, yeah, so nature is our guide, and she's our ancestor, right? And these archetypes I talk about are our ancestors, literally wise, guiding, loving ancestors. And so we can turn to them for wisdom, just as we are more and more realizing that we need to connect with ancestral wisdom.
Yeah. And I wanted to ask about this. Your focus is on women. And I think that's crucially important. What is the importance? Why focus on women and these female archetypes? And we'll get into the archetypes here in a little bit.
Right. She's chomping at the bit. Yeah, you can sense it. No. Well, not all my work has been focused on women. My previous book, Reclaiming the Wild Soul, was for everybody. You know, two things, really. One, just a sort of matter of circumstance, which was that I was asked to teach the landscape, a course on the landscape archetypes to an eco-feminist organization, Tree Sisters. And I'm one of those people who never like to deliver the same thing twice, right? You know, every delivery, every workshop is an opportunity to rethink and reconsider and reimagine. So I thought, like, wow, you know, women have this, we know we have this particular relationship with the earth, you know, our bellies, whoopsie, fill with, you know, ancient seas of amniotic fluid when we're pregnant, we have birth milk, we have our moon cycles, we have all of these things. But what would be different about our relationship to these archetypes? And of course, I had read a lot of Carolyn Merchant, The End of Nature, you know, Susan Griffin. I mean, just a lot of eco-feminist writers who quite rightly said that the death of nature and the subjugation of nature occurred alongside the subjugation and domination of the feminine. So what happened in the Age of Enlightenment, and this is a long way to explain this part of my thinking, is that we began to exploit the earth. You know, this new scientism allowed us to mine, rape, pollute, do all these things, put nature literally, as Bacon said, under the rack. At the same time, the witch burnings were going on. Because if the earth was associated with the feminine, if it was the mother earth, you couldn't do that to the earth if you actually believed in the sacredness of the feminine. So you had to desacralize the feminine and women in order to permit what you wanted to do to the earth. I mean, it's convoluted logic, right? But this was going on. So I really began to see how the wounds of the earth and the wounds of women were parallel. And I also felt that one of the greatest, what's the word I want to use here, harms against women was their over-domestication. So if women are going to come into their power and find their voices, if we are going to address the imbalance between the masculine and the feminine, and particularly the dysfunctional masculine, then women need to be rewilded, because overly domesticated women are not. And we see that happening. It's really fascinating in our country at the moment. We have a bunch of women who are happily taking us back to the 1950s, and another group of women who are saying, no, we're not going back to the 1950s, thank you very much. But so that really, that liberation of our fullness has to come through a rewilding process.
Right. Yeah. Something you noted in the book along those lines directly to this is women continue to be dewilded by being driven into loveless marriages and overly domesticated lives. This denaturing is an intentional disempowerment. Yeah. So there's a deep and profound connection with that. And as you were speaking, a couple of things came to mind is that during this Age of Enlightenment and the attack on women as witches, the book is right over here, and I don't know the author's name, but there's this book, Caliban and the Witches, which connects the suppression of women with the enclosing of the commons and this emerging capitalism. So, and one of the things that I struggle with a lot is wanting to talk to people on an individual level about this rewilding. And I think that men have to do this as well.
Right.
Yeah. But at the same time, one of the criticisms is always, well, but individually, what can you do when it's this industrial capitalism that's causing all this damage? And it seems to me, and I hope that I'm correct in this, is, and I want your insight onto this, is that in order for that to change, we have to begin at the individual level.
Yes, I think that that's really true. And I think the past few decades, we've worked a lot on ourselves on the individual level. So we have to do it on the individual level. Then we have to find each other.
Yeah.
Connect with each other and become a wave of incredible connected, supporting each other, rewilding each other. You know, I began this work about 20 years ago, the very particular work that I do, and it was so lonely.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you may have experienced that too. It's like, you know, I would talk to people about what I do and I could just see their eyes glaze over. It's like,
yeah.
Get me out of here. I don't, you know, this woman is woo-woo, she do da. And it was really painful. You know, it was, you know, I have to say I shed a lot of tears over that. But something inside of me was fierce with intent. And now it is changing. There is a way that particularly, and of course I want to see it happen in the male circles too, that women are gathering.
Yeah.
And they're gathering as goddesses, they're gathering as witches, they're gathering as eco-femmes, they're gathering as, you know, just unleashed women to support each other and really step together into their fullness and begin to shake things up. So I find that very encouraging. And it always has to begin. I think the thing is, in two, it's got, you know, it's about integrity, right? So sometimes we can be very excited because this opportunity to join this community comes along and it looks like a lot of fun and everybody's whirling around the fireside and, you know, we're kind of pulled and great, we should be. But it's got to be more about more than that. There's got to be this deep intention behind things now. That's the urgency of this time. Not that we have to move in a hasty, careless way, but we have to move intentionally. It can't just feel good. It's got to do good.
Right. Yeah. Oh, I love that. Yeah, I absolutely love that. One final thing I wanted to comment on, and this is kind of taking us back. I apologize for how my brain works.
I love how your brain works. Let it loop and swoop.
Yeah, that's what it does. But this idea of going back to like the spiritual ecology, and you've got a quote in the book from Starhawk, and I'm not sure the source, but I absolutely loved it. And I think it goes to this age of enlightenment and how, and also religion in general, where we've focused on like enlightenment, and that enlightenment is always seen as transcendent of the world. And I loved that quote that you included from Starhawk, and I should have noted it down, but it's like, no, it's actually going in and going into the earth and into ourselves.
Yeah.
And I think that is so important and vital. And it's that religion, that religere, and you note this in the book, that the root of religion is to rebind, to reconnect. And it seems that what is truly spiritual is that reconnection with the earth. And then we find a reconnection to ourselves, to our wild selves.
Yeah, it's, you know, she talks about, I think the quote you're referring to, endarkenment.
Yeah.
We need that. And very much for me, one of, if I can mention the an archetype, the forest woman archetype is that going into the depth and the duff of your fertile darkness. And of course, we're so shadow averse in this
Yeah.
culture, right? And that's why we see so many bizarre, paranoid, unhealthy expressions, is because we haven't gone. We want to transcend everything. And you can't do that. It doesn't change it. So there's this alchemical thing that happens, this deep, deep change that happens when you're willing to go into the dark, look into your roots, really feel what lives in your dreams and in the mystery of life. Because that's the other thing the Enlightenment did. It's like everything is supposed to be devoid of mystery, and yet we are all living in this great and profound mystery. So it really kind of squeezes the magic
Yeah.
out of life. And I think we want that magic and that mystery, and we need to know ourselves in order to hold that. Because that's a lot to hold. Magic and mystery is a lot to
Yeah.
hold. We need to know ourselves deep in our bellies, deep in our bones, deep in our
Yeah.
breath. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's look at these archetypes. So you've got five of them, and if I understand correctly, you are approaching this as a kind of an initiation, and these speak to different stages that someone, a woman would go through during this initiation. And I have to tell you that I resonated with a lot of them. And I do want to keep the focus on the female. I don't want to say, well, let's talk about men,
No,
but
it's good to talk about men.
Well, I think that's part of what needs to happen is we need to find that way of communication where men can relate to these archetypes as well, have, masculine wild archetypes, but to be able to join with the women, with the female on an equal basis as partners and to move forward into this new future. And maybe some have been doing that work. I don't know. I read a lot. I just haven't read enough.
Yeah, I think there is a lot of work out there, but I think very sadly, the men's movements really sort of began to dry up in the 80s. And I think it's going to come back. But one of the things I know very deeply in my heart and the experience of my own life is that if women change, men are going to change. You can't think. And also, I really want to talk about, just while we're talking about gender and men and women and everything like this, first of all, the way of the wild soul woman is for anyone and everyone, and certainly anyone who identifies as one. I've had trans women, gender fluid, I mean, everyone is welcome to this table. But there's one of the things that I want to say here, if I'm permitted just to say it, because I think it's important. Nature is diverse, and we celebrate that diversity. And the more diverse an ecosystem, the healthier it is. What we've done with gender in recent years is try and conflate it. I heard somebody just say they wrote a book on the hero's journey and that we are all post-gender. And I'm going, what the heck is that supposed to mean? I'm not post-gender. I grew up as a woman with a very particular experience. A trans woman will also have a very particular experience. Somebody who is more gender fluid will have, let's, instead of trying to say there's no gender, let's celebrate all the many forms and expressions of gender. And I'm speaking most particularly to the cisgender group because that's what I know about most. But I do think there's this kind of, I don't like to see things just conflated or disregarded. I want to see everybody celebrated. So I just want to put that out there because I know it's troubling for people nowadays to have these gender conversations.
No, thank you for that. And I agree with you. And as you were speaking, your exact sentence that you said was in my mind, that the more diverse an ecosystem is, the healthier it is. And yeah, I don't think that we should abandon the idea of gender. What I see happening is that the categories that we're used to are being challenged. And some people want to say, no, we have to get rid of the categories altogether. And I don't know that that's what we want to do.
And we'll muddle our way through for a while, and
Yeah.
that'll be fine as long as what we understand is that each person has the complete right to their own experience,
Right. Yeah.
and to honor and to cherish that, which I think is really important, but not to silence us. And I think as women, we've been so silenced for so long that just as we're finding our voices, don't tell us we can't have women's voices.
Right. Yeah, excellent point. Excellent point. So, let's look at some of these archetypes. The one that really spoke, a couple of them really spoke to me, but you begin with a desert woman, and that's one of the ones that really spoke to me because I love the desert. So, I'm not sure how to ask this question. I think I'm going to ask it as, well, who is the desert woman rather than what is the desert woman?
So desert woman is an aspect of the self that is mistressful at knowing and seeing through the mirage. So she's a great truth speaker. She is also, and why she begins her barren wild sort of begins the journey is because she knows a journey of transformation cannot be taken if you are laden down with so much baggage, limited beliefs, old stories, feelings of inadequacy. So she is the one that really says, whatever you can lay down now, this is a good time to lay it down. She is, in a very key way, the aspect of self that knows there is a self. So women particularly have been so taught, trained to seek our identity through the approval of others, through service to others, through, giving until we are dry and burnt out and exhausted, and in such ways, because that's how we find our way of self-worth. And Desert Woman says, look at me. I don't, I am utterly beautiful. I have incredible life in me. When the rain eventually comes, I will absolutely blow your mind, but I don't have to be doing and giving and putting out every minute of the day. So at her very heart, it's that part of you that says, I'm okay. And I think it's really important to know this journey is not about fixing ourselves, it's about freeing ourselves.
Oh,
And
good
part
point.
of that is a beginning of saying, as Desert Woman, I know there's this aspect, this energy in me that has been long neglected, but is there, that is saying, stop, spend a little time with yourself, get to know yourself before you take the next step.
I think one of the things that I loved about Desert Woman is that I think so many people, when they think of desert, they think that it's absent of any kind of life, but the desert is so rich in life. It's so surprising, but you don't see it until you stop and look.
Absolutely. I mean, we've called it terra nullius, right? Land of nothing. And, that's given us permission to pour poisons into the land, to blow, atomic bombs, to do all these things because we didn't have the eyes to see. And we didn't have the soul to see the desert. So Desert Woman is really, and it's the same with our interior, which is that oftentimes when you first try and get quiet with yourself, if you've got a meditation practice or any of those things, it's actually pretty terrifying. And your mind goes, wah, starts whirling around and everything like that, because we don't know how to just simply be with ourselves. And then we think we are nothing. Well, I'm nothing. I don't, big empty hole, nothing. And then the more we sit, the more we get that sense of the contours of our being,
And I think that that's key to Desert Woman is that inner experience. You connect it with exile, but I think it's a self-imposed exile where the individual is like, I need to step away from this community. I need to step away from all the traps and hazards of this society in order to begin listening, in order to begin that process of initiation.
Absolutely. And we know from the classic hero's journey that separation from community is the beginning. But as I'm clear to say, it doesn't mean you have to walk out of your house and leave your children behind. But you do, in those moments that you have, whether it's doing really boring, well, not boring necessarily, but repetitive tasks like washing up or, making a bed or doing the stuff of life, that you take that moment to tune in, to really tune in.
To start seeing. I one of the quotes I have from the book, and I took a couple words out here, but we need to look more deeply to see the deeper reality, not visible to the ordinary eye, of a cosmos that holds everything together. You, me, plum blossoms, and stars.
Yeah, and that piece was written as a response to these amazing Aboriginal women's paintings that we saw, and just literally not looking at the paintings, these huge canvases with all the dots we're familiar with. In the Aboriginal paintings, but had not been the right of women, Indigenous Australian women, to paint. They'd been allowed these other crafts, but then they were allowed to paint. And this sense of falling into them, not looking at them, but falling in to a vastness of connection, of just a sense of, just cosmic beauty, and we everything is, threaded together. So yeah, that was an amazing experience.
Well, it just shows that taking that silence and separating yourself somehow and looking in actually connects you with everything.
Yes. Absolutely.
So the next one, and this one also I responded to quite nicely, was Forest Woman, because I love the forest as well. But I'm interested here. You note at the very beginning of this section on Forest Woman, you say that Forest Woman communicates in images. Can you explain that?
So for me, Forest Woman awakens our inner seeing, because you can't actually see that far in a forest. The compass sun is hidden, the foliage kind of prevents you from seeing the horizon. So it's really an invitation here in the darkness, in this fecund darkness, to look inward, to see with that inner eye, that inner sight. And to honor the images, the symbols, the dreams, the intuition. I talk a lot about instinctual intelligence, feral intelligence in this place, because, we're so used as humans to using our sight as the primary means of navigating this world. So when you don't have that, I don't know if you've ever walked at night in the forest. It's one of my favorite things to do. It's so thrilling, but you don't see anything, but then all your other senses awaken, right? So that's one of her gifts to us that we begin to take seriously those things that come to us in dreams.
It seems like the imagery is, and for Forest Woman, is what comes to my mind is like a seed that we're planting ourselves into the earth. And it's that moment of darkness, and that's where dreams occur. But we have to do that in order to kind of sprout and flower later.
Absolutely. And one of the things that's very hard in our culture, I think, is to take the time to do that. So we're so often asked, well, what are you doing next? Oh, you just got divorced. What now? You just left a job. What now? In other words, no time to go inward, to dream. And then, of course, we just stumble into the next wrong thing. So hers is really an invitation to stop. Again, a kind of, both desert woman, you can't rush around the desert too much, and forest woman in a different way are an invitation to stop doing and start being and absolutely cultivate that seed that you were talking about. And nurture it in the darkness, because we know that when you put out shoots too soon, they're very fragile. They're too tender. They won't last. Somebody's big boot will come and stomp on it. So it's really about waiting for the right timing, knowing in your heart when it's ready to, it's been nurtured. You've given it the attention it needs.
What's coming to mind is, it's going to be a little weird here, but the filmmaker David Lynch. I absolutely adore David Lynch. And I saw a video of him. I think it's called the Way of Art or something, or The Art Life. But he talks in that about how you just have to take these moments to just sit and daydream, let your mind wander, because that's where you catch the ideas. That's when they come to you. And that's what I'm hearing as you're speaking about this. And I was also thinking in terms of different ways of thinking about spirit, but this idea of genius, it's that's the Latin term that was used to describe the Greek daemon. And genius, though, is connected with creativity, with the creative.
And there's something wildly creative about the dark womb of Forest Woman. It is where things begin to gestate and percolate. And as with all archetypes, you need not just to be possessed by one, because then you can spend your life. And I know many a fabulously creative person who is down one trail and then down another and, off on another. So you can get lost in the forest in lots of creative ideas, because you are being so communicated to with all these amazing, it feels like the sense of being channeled almost, and it's very alive and quite seductive. And then there's a time where you have to bless her and say, okay, the seed, I'm going to choose this seed, nurture this for a while, and
Well, and you make an excellent point in the book that, you have to come back to the community. But we'll get there. We'll get there. But I loved this idea, and this is something that I hold dearly. I have a quote from Thoreau that, and I've used this for years, and I should have it memorized by now, but it's about the value of getting lost. Because when you lose everything, that's when you find yourself, and that's when the world opens up to you, and you find this interconnection to everything. And I think that one of the things, according to this, because you wrote that you cannot obediently follow a well-marked path and live a conscious mythic life. And you say, whatever your ambition or passion, you will at some point need to summon the courage to veer off the track, that we need to kind of get lost. And I think that we like our well-trodden paths because we find security in them. And part of the mountain woman here, you noted that everything in nature bends and curves, and that it's uncertainty, which is the fertile ground of a life of renewal and resiliency.
Yeah, it's so easy to walk a well-trodden path. It's not particularly exciting. It may not be particularly rewarding, but it feels safe. And we feel, all of us, so insecure right now. I mean, there's so much going on in the world. And so it's particularly challenging in a way to leave that track. On the other hand, another way to look at it is, well, we are all so insecure. Everything is happening. We might as well go for it, right? So it's, and I think also this is a time of life thing. You know, sometimes we just need to be following that track. You know, we just need to do the work so we can have enough stability in our lives to leave the well-worn thing. You know, sometimes you have kids, you have, it's hard. I mean, the world is constructed to make it very challenging to be alternative, to take an alternative path. So I think we have to hold ourselves with immense compassion and know that the time will come and that we may have to stay just hidden under that dark earth and wait until we just have a little few more things in our lives sort of settled and sorted, and then maybe it'll be the right time. But it's just so interesting how, you know, this modern industrial patriarchal world traps us. It's just astonishing how the bars are invisible, but they are there. Yeah.
Well, I always think of, again, Thoreau and Walden, where he says he went into the woods to live deliberately.
Yes, isn't that interesting? Such an interesting use of word, isn't it? And that's partly, you know, when I was talking about the intention, you know, to be deliberate. It's interesting. I've had this horrible thing that I've got, which is giving me, amongst many other horrible symptoms, vertigo and dizziness. And well, that's an interesting thing to experience. And talk about being deliberate. I have to sort of get out of my head because my head is giving me all kinds of misinformation at the moment, and feel and deliberately put my feet on the earth. Every step is one that I need to consciously sort of be aware of and to feel it. And it's a very, it's exhausting. So to be deliberate takes a lot of energy and attention. So one of the reasons we aren't deliberate is it's kind of, you know, I don't have a choice right now. And it is definitely teaching me this sense of, number one, don't trust what everything that's here. Don't trust it because it's not actually telling you the right thing. But also really be conscious about how you move in the world. And that to me is, there's a wonderful poem called Sometimes by David Whyte, where he talks about moving across a shimmering sort of pile of trees silently, like our ancestors did. You know, that kind of deliberate, slow, quiet, attention-filled movement in the world.
Well, that's what Mountain Woman reminded me of. Is
Forest woman, I think
oh,
you meant
Forest Woman. Yeah,
to
Forest Woman.
say.
I'm sorry, I
That's
apologize.
okay. That's
Yeah, we'll get to Mountain Woman. I like Mountain
okay.
Woman too. But in between Forest Woman and Mountain Woman is Ocean and River Woman. And I see a connection there in terms of still going within. But the focus with the Ocean and River Woman is with the feelings, with the emotions.
Yeah, this is the waters breaking. This is the
Yeah.
preparing to birth. This is, trusting and surrendering to our truest feelings. And of
Yeah.
course, you have to become literate in emotions because emotions are, can be quite
Yeah.
tricky. But there again, we get swept up in the mainstream, which is polluted and sludgy and predictable. And we're really looking for this fresher source. And it's opening the floodgates of our hearts
Yeah.
and riding the wild river of our wanting, to really to come to know what it is you truly desire, not the superficial
Right.
needs and everything, but that deep, the why we're here, that part that's connected to the daimon you mentioned, this complete soul purpose that we come into the world with. So it takes, again, great courage, to allow yourself to feel, and particularly women, men, bless your heart, have been really clobbered in terms of emotion.
Yeah.
But women too, belittled. You're hysterical from hyster the womb. You're so emotional. I always got that growing up because I was very passionate. I grew up in the heart of London, and the English can be a little. And
Yeah.
it was always, shh, don't, it was always this like, don't get so emotional. Don't be
Yeah.
so emotional. Instead of saying, God, it's so wonderful. You really attuned to your feelings. So it's really learning. Ocean and River Woman teaches us to come to know our emotions as our guides.
Yeah. Yeah, I was in a relationship, a very long time relationship, and one of the issues, there were a few, and but my partner could not express very, and it didn't like the emotions and was always like, nope, don't speak it, don't say it. And I was like, you need to do this because this is not good. And what I've always thought, and I have a whole other backstory about this, but you noted if your feelings do not flow, they will make you sick. And I've seen that happen. I have seen that happen where people don't express what's there and it manifests physically.
Right. It's like water that doesn't move
Yeah.
becomes stagnant and
Yeah.
unhealthy
Yeah.
and toxic. So it really, and that's the other thing is, it's really learning that you can feel anger, but you're not angry. You
Right.
can feel joy. You aren't joy. Joy will
Yeah.
pass too. There is this way that it's this constant surrender, allowing, just like you can't, step in the same river twice.
Right.
Your emotions are like that. They're going to shift and change, and you can't choose. Oh, I just want to feel these ones. Thank you very much. You either feel or you don't feel.
Right.
And control is,
Yeah. Yeah, that reminds me of some ideas in Buddhism. You are not this. We identify, and when you said, I feel, there is anger, instead of saying I am anger or I am angry, just kind of say there is. And it's interesting though, because with the emotions, we don't want to be carried away by them. And it seems to me that there's this balance that has to be found with Ocean and River Woman, this balance between, this sort of free flow that can end up flooding. And I have witnessed how flooding can be so damaging. I was in Southern California when we had all these rains, and there was a canyon I hiked every week because I wanted to get to know a piece of land. And the last few months I was in California, I couldn't do it because the rains wiped away the first part of the trail. And so I can see the power there, but we also need to confine it in a sense. And that's something that you wrote, water needs a container. A river needs a riverbank, that we do have to have boundaries for these emotions in order to tap into the power and the energy. that Ocean and River Woman provides.
Yes, and one of the things, though, is we need fluid boundaries. So a riverbed and a river are in this constant dance of motion. So it's not trapping them like a dam. We don't want dams, but we want this more fluid communication. And I think there's this thing which is to acknowledge one's feelings, but also take responsibility for them. But the truth is, the people who flood, the damaging floods, and certain floods are necessary, right? Certain valleys need to be flooded periodically in order for the land to remain fertile. So flooding isn't always bad. Sometimes shh, it's going to come out. But the more you hold it back and the more you tamp it down, when that occurs, that's when it's really going to wreak havoc. You know, if you can learn to express your feelings daily, you know, you're much likely less likely to explode.
So the danger is when the dam breaks.
Yeah, exactly. When it's just being held back and you've held it back and you've held it back, and I'm not going to say that, and I'm not going to thing, and I'm so pissed off, and I'm and then you just one day, boom, you know, guilty.
Nope. I've been there as well. So, but I think that's an excellent point that sometimes the floods are necessary. Sometimes the floods are necessary. And I think this is the hard part, especially for men, is to get in touch with those feelings. I think that we don't have a very healthy relationship with Ocean and River Woman.
No, I don't think so either. And it's one of the great sadnesses. And that's why, you know, we each have to do our own work. And it's really sad. And I watch a whole new sort of what I call the tech bros emerging. And I go, oh my God, you know, where is the emotional maturity here? You know, but that's my personal, don't get me ranting.
Well, I think there is a certain amount of hubris, and one of the things that was coming to my mind is I've read before that, especially with the 20th century, that there was this sort of shift in consciousness, and you saw this sort of attack, in a sense, of what we can do, epitomized, for example, with the Titanic. That we can create something that is unsinkable. And it's that hubris of we can control this. And the iceberg says, you think?
Yeah, this sense of invulnerability is very dangerous.
For sure. So we need to be able to learn to swim, I think, to dive deep. That's where we need, yeah. So, because I now, a bunch of men just, dog paddling for a while just to try to get healthy. So, the next one is Mountain Woman. And I really related to Mountain Woman too, because I love the mountains. So, what can you say about Mountain Woman?
Excuse me. Well, she's the giving birth, so she's the one who acknowledges everything you've been through thus far in your journey and says, now, how are you going to show up in the world? And this doesn't have to be the world with a capital W. This can be in your family, your communities, your school boards, your, you know, just in your neighborhoods. But she's really about aligning your actions with your values. So you have this incredible sense of a mountain with bedrock. And the deeper the bedrock, the higher the mountain can be. If the bedrock is thin, it will actually collapse inwards. So if you're looking at a very tall mountain, it has a lot of bedrock. So that's really one of her messages. But her most powerful message, I think, is to reconsider what power means. It's, you know, not power over. So many women step away from positions of power because we don't like how power has been portrayed, how it is in our world. We see it as bullying, top down, kind of a real sense of domination. So we have to find a way into our power that is our way. And that to me very much is a mountain vision of chaining together to climb the mountain. And we have this really ridiculous sense in America that, you know, we do things, we pull ourselves up by our own bootstraps, we solo mountains. Nobody does it by themselves. There's always a team behind them. So this sense of really working with each other and making sure that we all can summit is really very important. I mean, I think the first waves of feminism, important though they were, courageous as they were, often benefited just a very small group of white privileged women, of which I'm one, right? But it didn't reach out. And now we have to reach out to different communities, to people from all walks of life, women from all walks of life, and say, you know, come, you know, or let me follow you up the mountain because I know you know things that I don't know. So I think it's Mountain Woman speaks to her humility that is absolutely essential to being with a mountain, which can kill you and knock you, knock you out, and also to a vulnerability. Because once you get above the tree line, especially in this culture, you become such a target for everybody to put their little slings and arrows into you. So you have to have that deep bedrock, right? You have to know who you are in the bones. You have to have that inner awareness and confidence in order to be that vulnerable and not be destroyed by speaking out, by taking action, by showing up. So for me, Mountain Woman is very, very powerful. I've always been attracted. I've climbed a lot of mountains in my life and been, you know, there's been this part of me that just can't see a trail up a mountain without wanting to take it, though that's changing. But I've learned you have to listen to something greater than yourself on the mountain, which is the mountain's weather system, which is the mountain rock slide, avalanche. All of these things are bigger than you, and you have to pay attention. And I think that is a new form of being in your strength and power. It's not to say you're invulnerable, like we were just talking about. It's to say, I'm vulnerable, but I'm aware, I'm wise, and I'm courageous.
Mountains have their own knowledge.
They do. They've been around for a very long time. Yeah. And also, I want to say there's one other thing about mountains, if I may, which is their volatility. I mean, if we didn't have a molten core, our planet would be a dead planet. So women have been trained not to invite, to be peacemakers, right? Disruption, argument, rage, opposition, all quite difficult for us. Mountain Woman says, baby, this is okay. You know, if you run into something that is completely wrong, stand your ground. It's okay to erupt, like you said, in anger sometimes. It's okay because that is how the world changes. That's how we create a new landscape. We don't have to be silenced and shamed and tamed. It's okay. We're molten women. We can, you know, get fiery.
The line you have in the book, I think that speaks to this and some of the other things you've been talking about, is Mountain Woman asks you to transform power over to power within and to remember that you are a creator who is birthing the world anew. And it seems like that, the explosive power there is channeled a little bit, but necessary. Necessary.
Yeah.
And so there's a journey that's going on here in the sense of sort of this sort of separation, you know, with Desert Woman, then planting the seeds with Forest Woman, allowing them the seeds to incubate, I guess. And Ocean and River Woman is part of that incubation, it seems. And then Mountain Woman is, as you said, that birthing process. And then finally, the end is Grassland Woman. And this is the reintegrating into the community as the ultimate challenge because, you know, Mountain Woman gives us that foundation. And with that foundation, that's when we can go into the world at large. So do I have the cycle there correct?
You do, and if it's not obvious, I'll just say, it's also a rebirthing cycle because you
Yeah.
have the barren worlds, the dark womb, the waters breaking, the giving birth, and now we're going to be nurturing
Yeah.
the new, what's newly born in you in Grassland Woman.
Okay. And Grassland Woman, it was interesting because I was trying to find ways of connecting, I think, with Grassland Woman a little bit better. And I like that one of the things that you commented on was that part of Grassland Woman is to be part of our daily lives and the cycles, because you noted about women's work, how we disregard women's work, but women's work is important. And, you know, we still have to do these chores. And what came to my mind is the old Zen adage, you know, what do you do before enlightenment? You know, chop wood, carry water. What do you do afterwards? Chop wood and carry water. And it seems like that's a lesson of Grassland Woman.
And I think I, also quote Cornfield with, after the ecstasy, the laundry, right?
Right, exactly, yeah.
I think it's the hardest part of the journey in many ways because it is about the quotidian, the everyday. The fact that this we've had these amazing experiences as we've taken this journey and we've uncovered and reclaimed these wonderful wild aspects of our own soul and our dreaming, our sense of dreaming is so alive in us and we are full of something. And then we return to community and oftentimes our nearest and dearest sort of say, yeah, great. can you take the garbage out? So it's really can be quite deflating. It also can be a sense of being very disoriented. It's like, where is my community now? Any of us who've had a profound experience often begin to question, where do I belong? Right? It's a big part of it. So Grassland Woman is about that deep patience to build up soil and soul, about showing up, doing what you can, and taking your time, finding the natural rhythm for when your particular special medicine can be received by community. And you may have to build a new community who recognize that medicine. And meanwhile, the kids will be needed to take to school, and all of these things will happen. So, a lot of everything will happen underground. But that's the truth of the grasslands anyway, is that what makes them strong is this incredible tapestry of connection under the earth, where each being is doing what it needs to be doing and leaving a little bit more than it arrived with. So it's this metaphor of patience and nurturing. And I know from my own experience, as I mentioned earlier, that it took me a long time to make my wild soul work, my work.
Yeah.
I had to patchwork and quilt together a whole load of different things to make a living. But every day I would do something towards my dream. Every day, just patiently, would do something. And I would begin to find people and communities and have conversations that began to make me feel less alone. And I trust it. Now, this is what I think is really important, is we have these gifts. And of course, the irony is that the moment we're born, we forget that we are brought into this earth with these special medicines, special gifts that we have. And then we spend our entire lives trying to figure out what they are, but we have them. And you will know it. You know, when it is the thing you are supposed to be doing, when it is the gift that you are meant to be giving, whether it's as simple as bringing joy and laughter to heavy situations, whether it's as simple as looking at your 3-year-old and knowing that you can love them up in such a way that they can grow up filled with their own possibilities. It doesn't have to be huge, but once you find that, there will be something in you that won't be able to give up on it. You'll go to bed, you'll dream about it, you'll think about it, you'll realize that you're not fully, completely yourself unless you're doing something towards it. And that was certainly my case. It was like, I didn't even know why. I don't even know how I ended up doing the work I do. I, honest to God, if you had logically followed my thing, it'd be like, bloody hell, that's weird. But when it arrived and it was mine to do. So I feel like there's a real humility in this. It's just, you know, expect miracles, but not on your timetable. And keep loving yourself. It's so important.
Yeah, no, all of that's quite beautiful, and I agree with it. And I particularly like the language that you were using, where towards the end, the gift is a medicine. And I was thinking in terms of just the language that's being used, because, Joseph Campbell, who popularized the hero's journey, he would always refer to, the hero returning home, which the grassland woman, but he would refer to it as a boon. And I think he said that, that it was something that was for the community. But I really like the language of medicine over boon.
Yeah, because I think it's all about how we can heal each other, the earth, our communities now, right? In our own particular way. And the medicine is sacred. And I think we have to hold on to that because otherwise we'll drop it. You know, but you have to, you one of the things I believe just generally is sometimes we don't take ourselves seriously enough. I mean, I believe at laughing ourselves. I love to laugh. I've flubbed so many things in my life and what the heck. But I also take this sacred medicine seriously. And I take myself seriously. You know, even when my English girlfriends roll their eyes at me, in my heart, I'll smile back, but I take myself seriously. So I think that's really important too.
Well, that's I like the idea of medicine because we need to heal. Heal ourselves and heal the world. And, that's something that you've noted throughout the book, that we're traumatized. We're all traumatized by these systems that we find ourselves in, and we're disconnected from the earth and our true selves. So medicine is exactly what's needed, healing journey. So, yeah, and this takes us back to the end, because one of the sentences that you had towards the end of the book is, as our inner landscapes transform and flourish collectively, we will surely change the world, which is hopeful. I often ask guests who write on, ecology and the state of our environment, do you have hope? And it seems to me that you do.
I do have hope. I mean, it's, you know, chaos is a sign of things changing. Do I wish we could just gently hospice the current system and very gently have this new flourishing earth and humanity. Yeah, but what gives me hope is people. I mean, I work with people all over the world who care so much about each other and the state of the planet. And there are more and more and more of us, and young people are rocking it. And I believe we really get that we need to come together collectively. And even, one of the things about Grassland Woman is that she will mediate, instead of, well, this organization has one problem with another organization, but they're really aligned on everything else, but they won't get together. Forget that. Get together and figure out, it's like, let's build consensus, let's build collaboration, let's build cooperation and get creative and come together. And that brings me hope.
And to do all of this joyfully, I think that you noted that in the book somewhere. And I was just thinking, when I read that, I was thinking about our current political situation with Kamala Harris and Tim Walz, who I think that they're referring to themselves as like joyful warriors.
Yeah, I wrote a lot about it actually in The Grassland Woman, which was really saying that if we want to create a movement, if we want to attract people, we can't be all doom and gloom. It's hard enough, and most of us have a lot of facts at our fingertips. But how you raise people up and you raise their spirits up by having it be joyful, and people can't resist that. And then along comes our joyful warrior, and I'm like, yes. Yes.
Well, I think that's crucial because we get so down on ourselves and feel imprisoned. I think that joy, just simple joy, is something that we need to nurture and celebrate. And
Me
there,
too.
I think we can find true healing.
True joy is, and it's not happiness, it's not the pursuit of happiness. True joy is a full-bodied experience.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I know we've been talking for a while, so I should probably wrap this up. So let me ask you, what do you have coming up next, and where can people go to find out more about you and your work?
Probably the best place to go, well, the best place to go, not probably, is my website, www.maryreynoldsthompson.com. And there you'll find a lot of beautiful nature poems, all the workshops that I have upcoming. Also in January, I'm starting a Wild Soul Woman book circle and sisterhood community. So just a lot of stuff, but the place to find it all is on my website.
Okay, wonderful. I will put a link for that in the show notes in the video description, as well as a link for your book, The Way of the Wild Soul Woman. And I encourage everyone, even men, to read it. I think that it
Thank you.
can stir something up and ask, how does this apply to the men? And then how can we connect with the female? I think it's really crucial and valuable. And as you noted, archetypes and metaphors are paradigm shifters. So, well, Mary, thank you so much for your time this morning. I
Thank
really
you.
appreciated it and enjoyed the conversation. And thank you for your work.
Thank you, Nick. Thank you so much for this conversation.
And that's a wrap on episode 163 of Rebel Spirit Radio. Thank you so much for listening or watching if you're a part of my YouTube audience. Now you know what's coming up next. All the usual. Sign up for my Patreon. Share this with friends and family and on social media. Subscribe or follow the podcast on whatever platform you use to listen to or view podcasts. You know the drill. But here's the thing. All of that is really important and helpful. Sharing, subscribing, or following are all free, and they really do help. Right now, putting together this podcast is a labor of love. I'm in the process of making changes to improve the podcast and the YouTube channel. It's slow going, but your support will help me speed up the process and ensure that I can continue with the podcast and offer much more content than what I provide now. As I always like to say, I'm here in the Front Range now doing missionary work in regards to spirituality, religion and ecology, consciousness and psychedelics, and how all of this can help us heal humanity's relationship with the sacred earth. So if you feel moved by the rebel spirit, and you know, I sure hope that you do, then please, by all means, help me in my efforts to share the good news. I'm Nick Mather, and you've been listening to or watching Rebel Spirit Radio. Until next time, may you be at peace, may you flourish in all possible ways, and may you continue to nurture your rebel spirit.